This week on the River Avenue Blues podcast, we're talking about a derpy weekend series against the Twins, but looking ahead to a weekday series against the A's with RAB alumni Hannah Ehrlich. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast. I'm Joe. Mike's with me today, and we'd rather not be podcasting today, Mike, because there's really no positive to take from that last game.
Yeah.
To be clear, I'm sorry. This is a Tuesday morning show. The Yankees played the Mariners yesterday. We're talking about Sunday's game, and we're recording this right after, and it's just, holy crap, Mike. Nothing kind of prepared us for that ending.
Yeah, every time you kind of have a lead going into the ninth like that and you give the ball to David Robertson, you feel pretty good about it. I know there are a lot of people out there who are kind of questioning with Robertson being the closer coming into the year, but I thought he was going to be perfectly fine, and he has been fine. He just had this, just terrible meltdown, and, what happens, he wasn't going to go through the whole season and not blow a save, and you'd just rather it not be like a six-run inning like that, but that's life. I think the frustrating thing about this weekend was the offense, because they scored six runs in the three games, and the Twins started two guys who had literally the two worst ERAs in baseball, and
yep.
The Yankees scored six runs in three games.
Yeah, and Friday was Friday, in that Nuno went and they didn't get that bad a performance out of him. But, when the offense doesn't score, it doesn't matter what kind of performance you get out of Nuno, that he's going to lose. Yesterday that was just so frustrating, because Corey is just so bad. And it took him forever to score runs. They scored one run off him, right?
Right, and that was the Solarte home run.
Yeah.
And just watching Correa pitch, it's like, how does this guy get outs? He'd get two strikes, and he just had nothing to go to. It was like watching Phil Hughes the last few years. He gets two strikes, and there was how was he going to end this at bat? Because they just kept fouling stuff off.
What I noticed was he, on a couple guys, he was throwing an 87 mile an hour, I guess, two seamer maybe. It was a little slower than his fastball, and guys were swinging right over it. Although with Mark Teixeira, that might have been his wrist acting up.
Yeah, and when I went to write the series preview and I kind of looked at Correa's pitch effect stuff, it said he only threw 28% fastballs. And that was four seamers, two seamers, and cutters combined. And I was like, this just does not seem right. And watching the game, it looks like he has a bunch of sliders that were classified as cutters. And he's just kind of a kitchen sink junk bowler type. And, it worked for whatever it was. He threw six innings and the bullpen kind of melted down there for the Twins, and the Yankees won. And, losing two of three to the Twins, who are bad. I know they came in, I think they were only two games under 500. But we know the Twins are pretty bad this year. And dropping two of three at home is pretty kind of frustrating. And, these last, I guess, 2.5 weeks was maybe the easiest stretch of schedule the Yankees were going to have this season. They played the Mets, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Twins, and those teams could all finish in last place. And the Yankees, I think they went 9-11 in those games, and that is not. I would have liked something much better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we got the A's coming up this week, and that's not going to be any fun, because the A's, if you look at Baseball Reference's simple ratings system, it's not mm-hmm. it's not the most perfect system in the world, but it takes into account strength of schedule and a bunch of other metrics to try to give a relative strength of the team. And basically, this metric says that the A's are awesome and every other team is terrible.
Yeah, the A's, I think they're, or at least I looked the other day, they were second in the league in runs scored and first in runs allowed. So they had scored the second most runs and allowed the fewest. And that is pretty much the best combination you could possibly ask for right there. And, you look at the roster and the pitching staff, maybe wonder about those last two spots with Tom Malone. I haven't looked at the pitching matchups this week, but
we'll look them up right now.
It feels like it shouldn't you know, Sonny Gray and Scott Kazmir are the 1 and 2. Maybe they should be the 2 and 3 instead. Maybe that would maybe just look a little bit better. But
Sonny Gray is awesome, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Sonny Gray is awesome. But, you know, is he? How's he going to pitch in August after, you know, when he bumps up on his innings? Not his innings limit, but when he starts pushing beyond the most innings he's ever thrown before and fatigue becomes a factor and stuff like that. And, you know, with Scott Kazmir, all the injuries he's had. You know, but the thing is, the Yankees are playing him this week. The A's are playing very well. You know, they play him 3 games in Yankee Stadium this week, and then 3 games in Oakland next week. So that's, you know, I think 6 of their next, I guess, 12 or so games are going to be against them, and that's tough because the A's are, I mean, they're really, really good. You look at their roster, and it feels like there's no bad player. Like even their 25th guy is still pretty good.
Yeah. So, by the way, Sonny Gray, he went today.
So they miss him.
So the Yankees will miss him. They get Kazmir on Tuesday, Jesse Chavez on Wednesday, and then a to-be-announced on Thursday. I'm supposing they know who that is, but it's one of those. They have Monday off, so they can, you know, whenever you have an off day, they tend to leave some of these spots blank.
Yeah, and I think one thing, not to get too far ahead here, but one thing that'll be kind of interesting against the A's is Tanaka's going to face them in both series, I think. And that'll be just kind of, you know, Tanaka faced the Cubs twice, and that's the only team he's faced twice so far. And you know, the Cubs hit him well the second time, but looking at that game, I mean, it was raining, and you just look at the hits he gave up, they were just bad pitches out over the plate. It wasn't like they were laying off his splitter or something like that. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what a good team like the A's does when they see him a second time, especially basically 1 week right after the other. That'll be a... I'm not worried that Tanaka's going to stink or something like that. It's just kind of interesting to see the adjustments teams will make against him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's going to be something. I mean, we're not going to get to see that until much later in the season, it seems. You know, because with the unbalanced schedule, the only teams he's going to consistently see are the teams in the East. Every other team, like it seems like they're doing this with the schedule this year. They'll play a team, and then they'll play a couple other teams, and they'll be right back to that other team, and then they're done for the year.
Right.
Like with the Angels earlier in May, they played them. Like 2 consecutive weekends, and then they're done for the year. They'll never play the Angels again this year.
Yeah, then they do that with the A's. And the Yankees, they had all their, like, interleague games. It was like the old schedule, you know, with this new, with the Astros moving to the AL and everything, interleague was supposed to be spread out. But for this year, it wasn't. The Yankees played, like, 5 interleague series in the span of 6 series last month. And thankfully, they're done with the NL part. You know, it was kind of... I'm kind of getting sick of the whole pitcher's batting thing. And but the thing is that the Yankees don't really have a DH right now with Beltran hurt. So if they were going to get all these interleague games out of the way, that was a good time to do it because they weren't, like, you know, missing that one big bat or something like that. So
yeah, absolutely. Now, speaking of the Beltran, we usually do a separate segment with the injury update. But there's a bunch of them. Like, it seems like the past week we've got an update a day on these guys. So let's go into that real quick because there are some updates. Carlos Beltran, he's scheduled to play a rehab game, right?
I think he's going to – well, he's going to Tampa definitely. And I think he's going to play in, like, an extended spring training game or two first, which is – I mean, it's the same thing. It's just a really, like – extended spring training is, like, this wonderful, like, controlled environment where he could, like, lead off every single inning because there's, like, no rules or anything. And so he'll actually get, you know, like, game at-bats, you know, and stuff like that. He'll just won't have to wait his turn in the lineup. He can bat every inning, and I guess he'll do that for, like, a game or two, and then he'll actually go out on a rehab assignment. And the Yankees have made it pretty clear that they're going to bring him back. At least at first, he'll be a DH only, because they don't want to risk re-aggravating the bone spur in his elbow by having him throw in the outfield. They're just worried about getting his bat back, and that seems like a pretty good idea because they could use him.
Absolutely, and you'd think they'd have him back for the weekend series with the Royals. It seems to line up. You want to take him on the road trip with you.
Yeah, that seems like it's just kind of convenient. You take him, you know, he'll fly from Tampa, meet them in Kansas City, and, you know, he's on the road trip with you before you go out west. And so I guess that would be, you know, 5 days from now or after the A's series, which, you know, you stick him in there as the DH, and you just kind of you slap him right in the middle of the lineup and just hope it works. And, you know, obviously, just looking at the lineup they ran out there today, you know, they had Gardner, Jeter, Ellsbury, Roberts was playing, Ichiro was playing. That's like 5 guys right there who have basically no chance of hitting the ball out of the park.
Yep.
And that's just too many. and Beltran will help that. I don't know how he's going to hit it first. Remember, he wasn't hitting great before he got hurt. But I think that was just like a slump. I didn't think he was like done and never going to hit again. But how is he going to hit it to the layoff?
He started the season hot as anything.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the guys carrying the team in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and he's basically, I think it was just like a coincidence, but he stopped hitting pretty much as soon as he flipped over the wall in Tampa. And he actually hit like well for like 3 games after he flipped over the wall, and then he stopped hitting. So I think that was just kind of like a convenient like point to reference. But maybe this little time off will help him. Maybe it was whatever it was. You know, it could have been anything. And with Teixeira out, that's the other thing we have to talk about is Teixeira's wrist. With him out, the Yankees are like obviously really short of bat. You know, I like Yengervis Alarte. He's been pretty good. But hitting him fifth is like a problem. You know, there's a problem there. He shouldn't be hitting that high. He shouldn't be like your last productive hitter before the guys come out who are, you know, the next 4 spots in the lineup aren't going to put up much of a fight.
Yeah, no, they're not. But there is an update on Teixeira, too. You know, he left yesterday's game with a wrist injury. He had a cortisone injection, and they're being, I guess, cautiously optimistic that he could be back in the lineup on Tuesday.
Yeah, they got the cortisone shot. He's going to sit, and they're going to reevaluate him on Tuesday. Because
they're facing – they want his righty bat in the lineup against Kazmir. And apparently it's the same deal as last year where he is much more comfortable hitting as a righty.
Right.
So getting him in the lineup Tuesday seems like it's a possibility, and then I guess they'll go from there.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that even when they get him back, how are they going to manage this? Because it's pretty clear he can't play every single day. You know, maybe they have to sit him twice a week to keep him on the field, you know, instead of playing him 2 straight weeks and then having him sit 5 straight days or something like that. You know, I guess they got to spread it out somewhat. They have to figure out how to manage this. And that's kind of tricky because wrists are just, you know, I guess it could flare up without notice there. You know, the doctor said when he didn't play in St. Louis, Teixeira said the doctor said he was surprised it wasn't flaring up more, which was kind of scary to think about. But, you know, they got to figure out how to manage this thing a little bit better than they have been so far.
Yeah, and there is light at the other end of the tunnel, as they say. Because, again, Jose Bautista went through something similar, where last year he was good but not great, and he got better as the year went along. And then this year he's back to tearing it up.
Yeah, and David Ortiz as well had the injury.
Well, he didn't have surgery, though.
He didn't have surgery, but he had almost the same injury, and he rehabbed it. And that was, I think, 2009, maybe 2008.
It was 2009 or 2010.
And it was like, oh, David Ortiz is finally done.
Yep.
And then, you know, he needed time to heal, like Bautista did. And once he got those few months in, he was back to being David Ortiz. So, you know, he kind of – Teixeira, actually, he looked good, though. He was very good last month until the rest started acting up. And, you know, he was hitting homers left and right, and – then once he kind of started to slow down a little bit, and then he heard the wrist was acting up, it made sense because he didn't look completely comfortable. And I was even watching the game yesterday. I saw he swung the bat, and then he would start flexing his hand and his wrist and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, that thing's definitely still bothering him.
Yep. And it just makes me think that, you know, in, I guess, the draft is in what, 4 days, 5 days?
Thursday, yeah.
It's Thursday. I mean, Friday morning, I think they're going to have Kendrys Morales under contract.
Well, the thing about Morales is that, how are they going to squeeze him into the lineup?
Look, they had to be willing to do this at the beginning of the season. This is going to be a very unpopular opinion. You have to DFA Soriano at that point.
Would they actually do that?
That's a good question, and it's a totally valid because the Yankees aren't a team that kind of rushes to these things. But you're more than a third of the way through the season. Soriano has just been a complete drag on the offense.
Yeah.
He's against lefties, yeah, sure, he's fine. But against righties, he's just unusable. Like, there was a reason that Zoilo Almonte DH'd, and he didn't today.
Yeah, and the thing is that Soriano has started slow the last few years. And it seems like usually around June is when he kind of starts to take off a little bit. And obviously you kind of hope that's the case again. But he's hitting worse this year than he had in the other last two seasons up to this point. You know, at least the difference between this season and the last few seasons was basically a bunch of singles. Like, he's hitting for the similar amount of power. He's not walking, obviously, because he just doesn't do that. But the difference, like across the board, he's missing like 30 points of batting average due to singles. And you know, looking at his at-bats and his games and stuff, it doesn't, I mean, there's like a lot of weak pop-ups and stuff like that. And there's obviously a ton of strikeouts. And it's not like, you know, oh, geez, he's just being a little bit unlucky. And, you know, I remember when Solarte went through his slump, he was hitting balls right at guys. And that was like, geez, he's about to snap out of it as soon as he stops hitting the ball in the wrong places. I don't see that with Soriano. He looks pretty, you know, at his age, I mean, you kind of worry that he might just be done forever. And, you know, the Yankees, are they willing to pull the plug? I don't know.
I think you have to be at this point. Right, they're at a time when the AL is so mediocre, they're lucky to be where they are right now. Like, and I'm not blaming anybody or trying to be negative. I'm just stating that the Yankees are lucky to be where they are right now. They need to, if they have an available move that will help them mitigate the risk from Teixeira and also get another bat into the lineup, someone who is almost certainly going to hit a lot better than Soriano, I think they have to jump on that opportunity.
Yeah, and I think if you sign Morales, like Friday is the first day that you could sign him and not give up a draft pick. And I mean, you're so close right now. I mean, you might as well just wait.
Oh, yeah, there's no way. There's no possible way. I do think that there's a chance that Jack Z completely trolls everyone and signs him on Thursday.
Yeah, I think there's a few teams out there that could probably squeeze him in there. I think the Rangers with Prince Fielder now done for the year could jump in too.
Well, but the Rangers they're just terrible. Like,
they are terrible.
Like that's not a good use of their resources at this point, because their best resources is trading away players, not adding players.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying that I could see them jump in there. But obviously with Morales, I mean, you sign him Friday, that doesn't mean he's going to be in the lineup Friday night. You know, he's going to need, I mean, Stephen Drew took a week of minor league games to just kind of get himself back into game shape and see like actual, like live real pitching, you know, and Morales is going to need to do that too. So if you sign him on Friday, you know, you're probably not going to have him for a week. And by then you might have a better picture, a better idea of what you're getting, of what Beltran can do when he comes back from his wrist. From his elbow, what Teixeira does when he's, you know, kind of nursing the wrist. And, you know, maybe it's just like a three-headed kind of rotation there between DH first base, and maybe you stick Beltran in right field once a week. And I remember back when a few years ago when Pujols was, when he was a rookie, maybe it was his second year or whatever, when he was playing left field, he had an elbow problem, and, you know, there was no DH there, so they couldn't DH him. And what they did was they stuck him in left field, and he would underhand the ball to the center fielder to throw it back in. Maybe they do something like that with Beltran if they absolutely have to. You know, that's like a worst case. Like, I mean, that would be like the most absurd thing, but it's not, you know, there's a precedent there, and maybe they could do it.
No, it is absurd. I don't think they would do it, but I do think that if they sign Morales on Friday and he's, say, able to come back, so he fly out let's give him some generosity. Let's play with the schedule and say he'd be back for the 17th against the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. You'd have to think that maybe Beltran would be ready to play the field at that point.
Hopefully. And yeah. I think with Morales, I mean, it's not like he signs Friday, plays in a minor league game Friday night. He has to go through optional waivers like Drew did.
Yep.
Because they have to send him to the minors. And that there's a process now that takes three business days. So it's not like he could play right away. So they sign him Friday, plays Monday or whatever it is, Tuesday, give him a week. So maybe it's not the next weekend, it's the weekend after or something like that. And then you get him back and, you know, you kind of figure it out from there. And I think the one thing we have to remember is that Morales, he's not much of a first baseman anymore.
It doesn't matter at this point.
That's the one thing I'm worried about is, okay, if you're going to play this guy at first base to get Teixeira off, I mean, the infield defense is so bad as it is it really going to matter if Morales is out there? I mean, yeah, I think it does a little bit, because even though Teixeira has not been good, most of the plays he's botching are like hard hit balls right at him. He's still scooping throws fine and stuff like that, and you're not going to have that with Morales. At this point, though, they just need offense.
Yep, exactly.
They need somebody to hit. They need somebody who can hit the ball out of the park. They just have... Like, I know, I don't want to sound like obsessed with home runs here, but they play their home games in this tiny ballpark. Their other teams are having no trouble hitting home runs. The Yankees, you got to be able to generate offense with one swing once in a while. And outside of McCann and Kelly Johnson was like the second best power hitter they had in the lineup today. That's a problem, you know, with Teixeira out. Beltran out, that's a problem. You get Morales in there. If you need to give Beltran a day off, you need to give Teixeira a day off, you won't lose any of that. He's just he's available for just nothing but money, which is preferable because you'd rather not trade prospects for him for anybody if you don't have to.
And it lets them keep their prospects to add to the pitching staff because it's seeming more and more like they're going to have to do that.
Right, because Pineda just had his setback too. And
he swears it's not a big deal.
Right, but the fact is he's still shut down
for
10 days, Girardi said. So his delay has been pushed back.
So yeah, exactly. So he's gone from mid-June best case to early July best case.
Right. Basically, the All-Star break is he'll be back maybe after that.
He and Sabathia, same timeline, I think.
Right. And even then, I mean, how are you going to count on Pineda to stay healthy? I mean, guys who have shoulder surgery don't just magically stay healthy forever after that. They tend to have these little kind of bumps there and... Yeah. You know, that's they're just going to have to deal with that. And you know what? Even when Pineda was pitching earlier this year, I mean, the Yankees, 90 pitches, he was done. They took him out. They handled him with kid gloves there. And now that he got hurt, had a setback, when he comes back, I don't think they're going to be like, all right, bam, you're a 110 pitch per game starter. You know, that's just not going to happen. And to their credit, you know, the pitching staff hasn't been horrible these last few weeks. Chase Whitley's been pretty good. The problem is he's just a five-inning guy, you know, if that. Nuno just is terrible at Yankee Stadium. Like, yesterday was a disaster. A disaster. But he's, you know, he's been okay. And Phelps has been all right as well. And they haven't been great, obviously, but they haven't been horrible. You know, they could get by with this until these guys get healthy. I still think they need another starter. And like a good one too. I don't think they just need like a, you know, like a number four or five guy. I think they need somebody pretty good. And, you know, you sign Morales, you keep your prospects to make a trade. I would still really like to see them add a second baseman as well. And like I get, Brian Roberts has had like three pretty nice weeks, but I mean, come on, if you could replace him, you got to do it. I think
he looks like one of the only replaceable guys in the starting lineup too. Jay and I talked about this last week. Like, if you look at the start, who else are you going to replace? There's really no one to take out of the lineup except Roberts.
Right. And, you know, the thing is you have some flexibility there where you could get a second baseman or a third baseman because you could stick Solarte in the other spot.
Yep.
So you don't have to worry about that. And McCann is starting to come around a little bit. And I think, I think it's from the start of the Brewer series, which is like 20-something games now. He's hitting like 270, 350, 450, which is pretty much like exactly what I would expect him to hit over a full season. And he just looks more comfortable. And it just looks like a case of he came to a new league, had to learn an entirely new pitching staff. And there was a bit of an adjustment period. And now he's starting to get over it. And he looks much, much more comfortable. I mean, the overall season numbers aren't there, but that's just going to be the way it is because he has to, you know, those bad at-bats happen. They don't just go away, but I feel better about him going forward. And, you know, I guess now with Teixeira out, I guess Kelly Johnson's going to play a little more. I'd like to see him play a little bit more often than like once a week because I feel like Kelly Johnson could help them because just hitting like seventh or eighth or something like that, you know, he could hit the ball out of the park once in a while and he works the count. And, you know, when you get Beltran back, I think Ichiro will play less. And, you know, Ichiro, he's been playing more lately and predictably he stopped hitting. So, you know, I like him better as a fourth outfielder the way it was going before.
Yeah, playing twice a week. That totally worked. That worked for everybody, pretty much.
Right. So that's, I think, you know, signing Morales will help, certainly. It's not the perfect fit for the roster, but that's who's available. And I can't help but feel like, you know, the Yankees just, there's just so many things they need that it's going to be almost impossible to address them all. And they're just going to have to do the best they can because they need another pitcher. Need somebody to kind of spell Mark Teixeira first base, which would be Morales. They need another hitter. They need a better infielder would help, you know, maybe add a reliever too, you know, if Kelly's the other guy we have to talk about. He's coming back soon, but, you know, another reliever wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, so this way you don't have to use Dylan Betances 2 innings every other day, you know, something like that.
I think they're going to they're going to see how Andrew Bailey's doing too. I think his progress is going to, you know, play a large part in what kind of reliever they target at the deadline.
Yeah, and, you know, that's not like a pressing need, I don't think.
But it's just, the back end of the bullpen's good enough.
Right. Every single team in baseball wants another reliever at the deadline. That's just the way it is. And but, you know, it's something they could use, but it's not a they obviously need a – they need a starter more. They need a batter, too, definitely. And you know what else they need? They just need more from the guys who are already on the roster.
Yep.
Need Ellsbury to hit better. McCann's starting to come around, but they need him to be better. Gardner's been fine. Solarte's been fine. It's, you know, that's why you're kind of stuck with Roberts there and even Jeter as well. You know, Jeter's been hit better of late, but they still can use a little bit more from him. And, you know, that's really the big thing, because they have some guys on the roster now who they just need to do more than what they've been doing. That's like the most important thing is, you know, just, okay, you have some good players in place. So, you know, Hiroki Kuroda even fits into this too on the pitching staff. You know, he needs to be better than what he has been. And you know, they could trade for Jeff Samardzija, whoever. The fact is that's only one guy every fifth day. You know, they still need better work from the other guys in the rotation.
Yep, and again, they need the injured guys. They need Beltran to come back strong. They need Sabathia and Pineda to come back strong. The Yankees are a potentially very good team. It's just they need a lot to go right.
Yeah, and I think they're lucky in a sense that the AL East is just so terrible that, the Rays are so bad. I mean, they have a worse record than the Astros right now.
Yeah, if you look at ESPN's expert page, they polled something like 40 or 45 of their baseball writers.
Mm-hmm.
And all but five put the Rays in the playoffs.
I had them in the playoffs, too.
I think the point is, I'm not busting on the ESPN analysts. I'm saying it was a pretty universal idea that the Rays were going to make the playoffs. They should be the strongest team in the AL East by no small margin. And they are the worst team in the American League right now.
They just ran out of pitching. Like, you know, we're kind of used to the Rays always having enough pitching. And when they didn't have enough pitching, they just, like, called up some guy from the minors. And he was awesome. Right away, instantly awesome. And that just hasn't happened this year. They don't have those guys anymore. And Evan Longoria is having a terrible year.
Will Myers is having a bad year. Just went on the disabled list with a wrist injury.
Ben Zobrist was hurt for a while. Their catchers aren't doing anything. And, you know, James Loney's been pretty good. It's kind of weird that James Loney's a good player now. But he's been good, but not great.
And he's been a lot worse in the last, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah, so they're not, you know, it's just a... They're just really underperforming there. And they're so far back now. I don't want to say that they're like a non-factor, but it's like they're starting to fall behind, really fall behind here where it's, you don't want to rule them out completely because it is just June 1st now. But they're just so far in the back now that it's like you got to focus on the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Orioles now. And I think the Yankees play the Red Sox, the Orioles, and the Orioles and the Blue Jays. They play them like a combined number of 12 games at the end of this month, which is going to be pretty big. So,
you know. So here's another little Rays tidbit. Can you name me the player with the highest OPS on in their starting lineup of players with more than, say, 100 plate appearances?
I think I'm probably cheating. Is it Sean Rodriguez?
No. He only has 89 plate appearances, and he would be lower than this guy.
Is it Desmond Jennings?
No, his OPS plus is 99.
I have no idea then.
David DeJesus.
Oh, man.
I know Sean Rodriguez 129 OPS plus, best hitter, and Matt Joyce as well is over 100. Joyce, Loney, and DeJesus are the only starters. So they're over 100 OPS plus. So their offense is just completely sputtered.
And the pitching staff isn't good now. You know, Jake Odorizzi is not – he was, like, horrible in April, okay in May, and just, like, below average kind of across the board. And they have Cobb, who was out for a while. Chris Archer has been okay. And David Price – even David Price has not been
David Price is going – like, he's gotten a little unlucky with the homers, I think. I don't think that's, like, a problem for him. So, you know, I think that's going to be something that, you know, he has a 90 ERA plus now, but he's a 10-1 strikeout to walk ratio.
Yeah, he doesn't walk anybody. And, you know, that's why this whole beanball thing with the Marlins was kind of silly, because he walks nobody and he doesn't hit anybody because he just throws the ball where he wants. And, I mean, it was obvious the pitch he hit Ortiz with was on purpose. And I honestly don't think the pitch he hit Karp was on purpose, but you just look at it as, this guy never misses his spot, and now he's hit two people. It seems pretty obvious. But the thing is, if the Rays are going to, you know, if they if they don't climb back into it, which is still possible, it's still kind of early. I don't know how far back they are on the wild card, but I can't imagine it's more than like 5 or 6 games at this point. If they're not in it, are they going to be willing to trade Price the deadline? And not just him, but other guys that they have. You know, how, I don't think it would ever happen, but just how much of a fit would Ben Zobrist be for the Yankees? He'd be perfect.
Oh absolutely. But I just can't, like, I can't see Andrew Friedman ever trading any players to the Yankees under any circumstances.
See, I think he would. I think Anthopoulos said with Toronto, when they were looking to trade Halladay, he came out and said, I'm not trading guys within the division that would come back to hurt me unless I just get something I can't refuse. I think if the Rays' best possible return comes from an AL East team, I think they'll make it. You know, I don't know if the Yankees have what they want to get Ben Zobrist.
Gary Sanchez would look really, I mean, he would fit a big organizational need for them.
Yeah, and the question is what do they think about him catching? And, you know, what do the Rays think about him? You know, that's the important thing. But man, Zobrist would fit great for the Yankees.
I also wouldn't trade Sanchez for Zobrist. Not a chance in the world.
You wouldn't? I'd do that in a second.
In the last year of his contract? Oh, he's got an option
for next year. No, he's got an option for next year, and it's like $8 million, which is like nothing. I think this is probably another podcast for another time, but I think of all the prospects the Yankees have, I feel like, obviously, again, Sanchez is like the most, their best chip because he's their best prospect. And I also think the odds of him being traded now are higher than they've ever been.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just because John Ryan Murphy's been so good.
Right. And that's the other guy I think that obviously they might trade. And I would be really kind of bummed if they traded Murphy. Not just because he's looked good. He feels I know they signed McCann for 5 years, but you can never have too many good catchers. And they could kind of start this kind of apprenticeship where they scale back on McCann's workload a little bit. Maybe give him some more starts at DH and first base for the next year or two. And then when Teixeira's gone, you stick McCann in first, you let Murphy catch, and it fits a need. And when you look at these two guys, you know, Murphy's doing it in MLB. Sanchez is still in AAA. He's still got a long way to go. I would prefer to keep Murphy and trade Sanchez. I don't know if that's...
Oh, I would. Oh, absolutely, because you would give Murphy 3 years under... Is it 3 years? Yeah, it'd be 3 years under McCann.
Right.
Playing back up, and then you move McCann the first when Teixeira's contract's up after 2016, and you should have a good starting catcher. It's almost like it's not quite like the Jorge Girardi dynamic, because that was more of a split.
Yeah.
But it's still
the same idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And, if I was another team, like if I was the Yankees, if I'm the Cubs and the Yankees call about Hamill Samardzija, the first guy he asks for is Murphy, because you could stick him in your lineup tomorrow, and you got a young catcher with 6 years of control left, and obviously that would just be like one guy in the package, and maybe the Rays. I look at the Rays. It seems like every trade they make, they always try to. They'll make huge trades. Like, they won't just trade Zobrist for 2 prospects. They'll trade Zobrist and another guy for 4 prospects, and it'll be like this gigantic thing.
Logan Forsyth came over in like a 6-player deal.
Right. That's like what they do. They always seem to get like, it's like, all right, you need to add a AAA reliever. And then before you know it, like Brad Boxberger this year has been awesome for them. And he was like a throw in the Logan Forsyth trade. They always seem to get these useful second and third players. And, maybe I don't want to like spend too much time talking about it, because I just can't see Zobrist and the Yankees. I just feel like that's something that would not happen. But would the Rays, would they trade Price, Zobrist? Joyce is another one who would go. I mean, they're obviously not going to trade Longoria. That's not going to. He's their franchise.
Absolutely.
They have some. They have some pieces they could trade him. If they did that, that would really kind of change the dynamic in the AL East, because they're back to being the Devil Rays, basically, where they're kind of a pushover. And I don't know who plays them more down the stretch, but that could end up being a pretty big kind of a big deal. And that's why I was kind of annoyed the Yankees lost 2 or 3 to the Astros, because I feel like those are the teams that bad, you have to beat them. And you have like no margin forever. You need to get those wins when you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So that pretty much covers I think we just pretty much covered the state of the Yankees.
Yeah, I think so. I'm kind of really the injuries are the thing to watch, like on an everyday basis. And, the Yankees, they did okay and they held their own. But it's getting to the point where it's like, all right, they need these guys back, and soon.
Yep.
And, I think after, they have, whatever it is, four more games left on the homestand. After the A's series, they go out west. When they come back from the West Coast, they start playing the Blue Jays and the Orioles and those teams. That's when they're going to need Beltran, Teixeira, potentially Morales and Sean Kelly. And that's like when the season's really going to start getting a little tough.
Yep, absolutely. We always put up a poll with this podcast. Do you think the Yankees will have the chutzpah to DFA Alfonso Soriano to add Kendrys Morales? Because I think the answer to should they is, from most fans, is going to be yes.
Yeah, should be and will they.
They have the cojones to do it?
I mean, they didn't. They kept Vernon Wells last year, but that was a different situation because they had, like, nobody else.
They had no outfielders to replace him with.
And the thing was that Wells started well. You know, he hit really well in April and for, like, half of May. And then he just stopped. And then, you know, at least then you could kind of justify it by saying, we saw him hit well. We're kind of waiting for it. And it just never came back. With Soriano hasn't been good. And, you know, I joked last year when they made the trade that it was David Justice again. Remember, Justice was awesome.
Yeah.
2000 after they got him. Soriano was awesome last year. But then David Justice was terrible the next year. And Soriano's doing that too. So maybe he took, you know, calling him David Justice, you know, I was kind of joking around, but he's kind of followed that path where he was awesome the year after the trade, and just terrible the following season. And you know, to their credit, Girardi's noticed, and he's not playing against righties, which is absolutely the right thing. And, I guess, what are you going to, I mean, you need the extra outfielder, you know, who could they, so finally, okay, they had Morales. You're stuck playing Beltran pretty much in right field every day, or Ichiro.
Oh, Beltran was playing every day in right field before, so. One day off a week so Ichiro could play.
But I think I'm just worried about, well, not me, but the Yankees have indicated that they're going to DH him at first because they don't want to aggravate the bone spur with throwing. And, you know, fine, they still get to have Ichiro as the backup outfielder. You could always put Kelly Johnson in left field. That's not a problem there, and he's done it before. And even Yan Gervis Olarte played a whole bunch of left field. Even in spring training, he played it a bunch of times, and also in the minors. So they have the pieces there. I still think that Soriano has shown pretty much his entire career, and last year as well, that, I mean, when he gets hot, he's a monster. And you kind of see that he's had slow starts the last few years, and you kind of hope then, you know, maybe it'll click in the middle of June or early July or something, and you know, he'll just start mashing and he'll add length to the lineup. The only problem is, where do you fit him? I mean, how do you fit him? You can't petition the league for more DHs. They got to play these guys somewhere, and, you know, they have like three DHs on the roster as it is. There's just, you know, maybe they'd be able to trade him, get something for him. The only thing is, he's got a no-trade clause.
And indicated he doesn't want to go anywhere else, so.
Right. And I think, you'd look at it as, okay, they cut him loose, and I could totally see Soriano winding up on the Red Sox and just totally peppering the Green Monster there as kind of like a part-time left fielder for them. And, you know, you can't think about that when you make the move, but, man, you kind of worry about where he might end up and how they could come back to hurt them. And I don't know. I don't think they'll do it, but I don't think it should be completely off the table. I think they should consider it. I think the poll would be interesting to see. I think the vast majority of people would say yes, they should do it. But
This is going to be will they you know, make that decision sooner rather than later?
Okay. And you know what? One thing to go along with this, I was just thinking about this. I think I answered a question in the mailbag on Friday. Dylan Betances for the All-Star game. Do you think he'll get in, and do you think he should be there?
Oh, he should be there by far. I mean, he's got more strikeouts than many starters do.
Right. I think he absolutely should be there, and I think he has no chance of going to the game. And part of it is that they don't take very many, like, non-closing relievers. You know, there's usually two or three a season, or maybe just like two a year. And remember that John Farrell's picking the rest of the roster, and, you know, he's the Red Sox manager. And when Joe Torre was managing the All-Star game every year, they took like six Yankees a year. And, you know, is John Farrell really going to take Betances over like Koji or Tozawa or something like that? Or even Andrew Miller, who's been really good. When you do that, Probably not. So that kind of works against them.
There's the final vote, though, and Steve Delbar got in for that last year. So there yeah, is always that.
Yeah, and you got to see what position they pick, because they tend to group them by remember, they had all relievers in the final vote for the AL. I don't remember what the NL was, but I think it was all outfielders. So they try to group it by position, and I don't know. You got to see. But, you know, I think he should be there, and it'd be awesome if he was there. He's just been unbelievable this year. I can't – even, like, 2007 Jabba was not this dominant. And
no.
Well, it's so much fun to watch.
Yep. So that sounds like a good cutting off point. We'll end this segment now. I honestly have no idea what we're coming back with. So, Mike, it's going to be a surprise. Whatever, what the people hear next is going to be as much a surprise to them as it is to me.
The Mystery Podcast, yeah.
Absolutely. So we will be back in a few.
Hi, and welcome back to the River Avenue Blues Podcast. This is Jay. Along with me is Joe, and our guest this fine evening is none other than former regular blogger on the weekends, and now just a good old friend of the blog, Hannah Ehrlich. How you doing today?
Good. How about you, Jay?
Great.
And Joe?
Joe.
Doing just fine, Hannah.
So today we're going to talk a little about the Oakland A's, who are going to be in tomorrow for the next few days. And obviously, they're a team that's just on fire. It's really, really tough to get a team like this coming in. Hannah, you got to go and check them out recently. What would you say is the biggest strength on the A's right now?
Well, I would say one of the top strengths I've seen, you know, I was lucky enough to go both games this weekend where they swept the Angels, which is great. And I'm sure Yankees fans will enjoy that as well. But one thing I think that the A's have done a lot of is that they have a very balanced lineup, and sort of everyone is hitting pretty well, mostly with the exception of Josh Reddick, who's been mired in a pretty serious slump despite a four-hit game a couple games ago. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's one of the situations where a lot of their offensive decisions have just worked. They have an amazing catching tandem of Derek Norris and John Jaso, who's OPSing almost 900. Josh Donaldson, you know, is probably one of, if not the premier third baseman in the league right now. And he's batting, you know, almost 290 and going to the All-Star game, hopefully. And then you have Caspo, who DHs, plays a little second, plays a little first. Cespedes, who has got a lot of power and a great arm. You know, luckily for the A's right now, even with some pitching injuries, a lot of their offensive players have done really well this year, and well, so far at least. And, you know, that's sort of held up even when their bullpen has it.
Sure. So Cespedes, even though he's got his 10 home runs for this year, you know, a couple triples, plenty of doubles. He's only kind of OBPing about 296, 240 average. The slugging is down to about 490. You feel like he's a much stronger player based on what we saw out of him last year. Have you noticed anything different in his game? I know walks are not really his thing, so on base really isn't a big part of his game, but you'd have to imagine that a 296 OBP is not really preferable.
No, and obviously, you know, A's fans and I'm sure A's management and Bob Melvin would want that to be higher, but I think that a lot of the, you know, the issue with Cespedes' low batting average is that, you know, he's a free swinger. Mm-hmm. He's looking to hit home runs, he's swinging the bat hard, and so as a result, he doesn't take a lot of walks, he's not super patient. In a lot of cases, he's swinging at pitches that are not exactly choice pitches to swing at, especially in some cases in a two strike counts where he, you know, I don't know if he actually gets nervous and chokes up, but sometimes it seems that way. And as a result, you have, you know, a decently powered hitter that has a pretty low batting average. But in Cespedes' case, I would say a lot of that he misses in his batting average, he makes up with his arm. In the Angels game on Saturday, he threw out two runners at home in the same inning, which is pretty impressive. And I think that over the course of his two-ish years in the major leagues, you know, that word is starting to get around, and it helps the A's out a lot. Even if they're losing a little bit of power from him, then they gain a lot of sort of, I would say, the outfield defense, which is something that not a lot of players, not a lot of pitchers have, especially in left field.
Gotcha. So I look at a guy like Sonny Gray, who You know, in the American League, there's probably two real premier pitchers right now that you can say they're sit down and you got to watch these guys pitch. And it's Masahiro Tanaka and Sonny Gray. It's really hard to find any negatives in what he's doing lately. But is there really anything? I mean, he seems like he's got everything down.
Well, luckily he pitched this weekend, and I was glad to see him. And just the way he pitched seems that, you know, this is not a pitcher that has an obvious flaw. This is not a pitcher you're walking into who doesn't have an out pitch or is going to give you a lot of walks or is going to, you know, get into a lot of deep counts or is going to, you know, not give you a lot of length.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you come up against him as an opposing team, you're sort of wondering, you know, like, what's the best strategy here? Obviously, he's not in the same scale of, you know, Felix or maybe last year, 2 years ago, David Price, where you're like, oh, well, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is a pitcher who, you know, is a formidable weapon for the A's,
sure.
Especially this year when they've lost A.G. Griffin and Jared Parker to Tommy John surgery, of course.
Yeah. So that being said, that kind of drew Drew Pomeranz into the fold as a more significant player, which has kind of really gone the A's way completely. I mean, the guy's rocking a 5-2 record with a 2.37 ERA. Do you think it's moving out of that big ballpark coming? I should say that not big ballpark, but it was a ballpark that gave up a lot. Do you think moving into the Coliseum really makes it seem like it's just a way better place? Does he feel and seem more comfortable?
Well, first of all, I would say, obviously, you're going to have a major park effect when you're moving from Colorado to Oakland, one of the biggest ballparks, especially in the AL. You know, it's cold in Oakland. It gets pretty cold at night. It's a circular ballpark, you know, huge amounts of foul ground. So, you know, if you could, you could take almost anyone and move them from Colorado to Oakland, and you'd see a pretty serious improvement, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But other than that, I would say, you know, I don't really know exactly what Pomeranz has done or maybe what Kurt Young has done or what, you know, the A's developmental staff has seen or talked to or improved in Drew Pomeranz to, you know, make him this pretty capable guy. You know, so far he's doing great on the year. You know, he's a reliable starter. The one thing that he doesn't really give you is depth. He hasn't gone more than six innings in any of his starts. So that's sort of the one concern that, you know, Pomeranz has when, you know, he comes out to pitch.
Absolutely. So, you know, we covered a lot of the bases with what's going on with this team right now. And they seem like you would try to find some real flaws with them, but it's just difficult as hell. They're a great team. They've got it from, you know, all sides of their game. They seem to be finding the right thing. Are they doing more as far as like on the base paths, or is this kind of like that same Oakland A's ball club we kind of get to know that just is more station to station?
I would say that there might be a slight improvement in, you know, I don't really notice a lot of, runs earned in the case of going first to third or taking the extra base. But I would say that on the sale of stealing bases, there might be a couple of extra steals, especially when, you know, I would say
you got Coco Crisp out there.
Yeah, and the A's have a number of fairly capable base stealers. You know, Sogard is going to run, Crisp is going to run. You might have a couple of stolen bases from some of the other guys, especially, you know, and really I think that in a lot of cases, the guys you might not expect, it might be, you know, swiping a bag here or there. You know, even Derek Norris has two stolen bases on the year, and, you know, this guy's a 25-year-old catcher. You know, he's not going anywhere in a hurry. But I would say that mostly station to station, a couple of stolen bases. You know, obviously Coco Crisp leads the team and Eric Sogard is second. But I feel that, you know, when watching the team, you get the impression that they have a lot of confidence. And, you know, this is something you expect from a team with a run differential of 100, you know, and something where everyone's sort of, everyone's sort of getting what they need to. Everyone's, you know, really pushing on high cylinders. And obviously you can't, there's no statistic for confidence, but, you know, the way they play, the way they sort of move on the base.
A lot of swagger on that team, absolutely.
Yeah. the way they, you know, the way they move on the base paths, the way the pitchers pitch, the way the guys, you know, field. You get the impression that this is a team that's going out there and they think they're going to win and they know they can win. And, you know, this is a team that's going to go out there and say, we can beat anyone. You know, they, I don't know if pummeled is the right word, but they certainly gave Jared Weaver a hell of a game yesterday, which they ended up winning. And I think that, you know, this is a team that's even if the Yankees aren't as good as they usually are or could be right now, they're going to go in and say, look, we're a great team. We're winning. We just swept our division rivals. Everything's going well. And these may be the big bad Yankees, but, you know, look at their players and look at their records and look at their runs. You know, we can do this. And sure, obviously it's better to have super good players, but having a bunch of guys who are pretty good and saying we can have it, you know, we can get this certainly counts for a lot.
All right. So, Hannah, I have a kind of an odd question for you, and I might piss off some of our listeners, but it's killing me right now because the A's right now are on a trajectory that reminds me a lot of a team from the past. And since you were out here as a Yankees fan, kind of growing up a Yankees fan, and now you're out in A's country being able to watch them, do you see some 90s Yankees on this team? Because I like when I look at them, I see they're very well balanced. They have a lot of good players, you know, Eric Sogard notwithstanding. They have he's terrible, but they have some great pitching. They have a well-rounded team, and it seems like every player they touch turns to gold. And it was kind of like the way with the Yankees were in the 90s. They trade for these guys, they come over, and they just go nuts. You know, how else do you explain Mariano Duncan? So do you feel a little bit of a similarity between how these teams are built and how they're kind of going about their business?
Well, it's tough for me to answer that. On one hand, like, you know, when I think of the 90s Yankees, you know, that was the team I grew up with. You know, when I come home from school, I would just watch them every day. And so they sort of occupy this, you know, like immortalized, heroic, you know, superhero vein in my mind of which, you know, they will never leave. Like, if you still like Joe Torre at this point, then, you know, that says a lot. And I do. I don't know any better. I can't help it. So, you know, now growing up and watching another team, you know, even, you know, if the success is similar and the team is great and everything is working, it's hard to sort of compare to, you know, sort of the team of your youth and especially the heroic, victorious, and maybe the dynastic team of your youth. But I suppose in the sense of, you know, the players that they trade are doing well and, you know, the guys that they pick up and the guys that they need to perform are performing, then, yeah, you can say that. But I think that, you know, this team has a lot to go before they can prove that they're anything close to the 90s Yankees.
No, that's true. They have to win. They're kind of on the trajectory where, you know, 94, 95, 96, this would be the year for them if this was a true parallel. You know, but you look at guys like Brandon Moss, like he was not good before he came to Oakland, and now he's all of a sudden good?
Brandon Moss has been great.
No, yeah, but I mean, he was never good. He was never good before.
I don't know. You know, at this point, obviously, it thrills me that Brandon Moss is a good player and that he's hitting home runs for the A's. It's great. Everybody cheers. You know, this is a guy who's, like I said, he's playing with a lot of confidence. But, you know, it's tough to say, like, why people succeed here and why they don't succeed somewhere else. Like, is it an organizational thing? Is it Chili Davis who, you know, he's their hitting coach. He comes in there. He looks at Brandon Moss. He says, this is the way you got to hit. And Brandon Moss hits that way, and then he does it. Is it the A's platooning strategies? You know, Brandon Moss has been half of a platoon for a while, especially last year, and he just crushed lefties.
Yeah, it seems like the A's have put a lot of guys in a position to succeed. And that's the one thing that I've noticed the most in the last few years that the Oakland A's have done, where I'd say a lot of other teams really haven't had the patience, is that they've taken guys and they've pushed them quickly, and they've really given them the opportunity, along with some complementary players. You've got your Coco Crisp, and you've got guys like that who are going to be out there complimenting these younger guys who are just getting it done. Like Joe said, in a place where in other teams they just might not have. It's actually pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, and Joe Posnanski just wrote a big article about this, actually, which you reminded me of. And in the article, they talk a lot about Josh Donaldson, how, you know, Donaldson was basically a throw-in to the Rich Harden trade when they traded him to the Cubs. And, you know, they brought him up from 30 at-bats or so, and he was awful. So they sent him down again. And they brought him up for another 30 more at-bats, and he was awful again. So they sent him down again. And if you're the Yankees, no offense, if you're the Yankees, if you're the Red Sox, or if you're, I don't know, if you're 29, or if you're 27 or 28 other teams and you look at this guy and go, we gave him 2-3 shots, you know, what more can you ask? Like, we got to win. We can't just have some person learning on the job here. Then, you know, who knows what ace third base looks like now, but now you got Donaldson going there. He's, you know, I would say, obviously I don't know this either way, but it always seems like now he's sort of the ace team leader type. You know, he's got the huge power. He plays a fantastic third base. You know, he hits for contact. He takes walks. He's leading the team in RBIs with 48. You know, he's just an amazing player. And, you know, as sort of a side fact is that right now it's looking like Donaldson is going to be the first, you know, fan voted A in the past, you know, for the past 10 or something years. So, you know, there's always, you know, in the article, what Posnanski basically says is that, you know, a lot of teams have the data, but it's really depending on how you act on the data, which makes you successful or not successful. And obviously a lot of factors affect how you act on that data, but the way that the A's act and the decisions that they make are often very favorable to them, as is the case with Donaldson, as is the case with Moss, as is the case with the Norris, Jason Platoon, as is the case with Drew Pomeranz or any of these other, you know.
I mean, to a point, you can throw Reddick in there as well. I mean, I know he's not hitting well, but Reddick was a huge part of their success recently.
Right. You know, he was amazing for the first half of last year. And, you know, even though he's not hitting right now, you know, he's still got a great arm in right field. And
absolutely.
Between Reddick and Cespedes and Coco Crisp Speed or Craig Gentry, if Crisp isn't playing, you know, you have a very good outfield. You know, the fielding is great, even if the hitting isn't. And, you know, that's something that, you know, more and more these days people are starting to pay attention to.
Absolutely. So I wanted to kind of finalize everything here with a quick, I don't know if you would call it a baseball question. I guess it's a baseball question, but I guess it's more of a fan question. You go to a fair amount of games and you've kind of split your time between the A's and the Yankees. And I was kind of curious, what's it like to root for a team with Nick Punto on it?
It's weird. And the funny thing is maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, he hit a home run, which is a big deal, especially in the Cubs. I don't know if it was in the Cubs.
Yeah, it's a big ballpark.
Not. But he hit a home run. And, you know, I tweeted, like, I was like, oh, my God, Nick Punto just hit a home run. And, like, two or three other A's fans were like, you're kidding. Or like, no, he really hit a home run. It's not a joke. And he did slide head first into home plate, like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I was just thinking, ah. But, you know, like everyone says, you're rooting for the laundry. If Nick Punto is going to slide into head first, if he's going to play their game the right way, or if he's going to sacrifice bunt or whatever, as long as it helps the A's win, then I'm okay with it, unless they're playing the Yankees.
Makes sense. So, Hannah Elrick, you can be found on Twitter as FirstHeart42, and we thank you very much for coming on today and talking a little Oakland A's.
Thanks for having me. Go Yankees.
No problem. And we'll be right back with the River Avenue Blues podcast.
And with that, another edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast comes to a close. Thanks again to Hannah Ehrlich for coming and chatting A's with us. It was great to catch up with an old friend. You can probably even see Hannah's old archives still on River Avenue Blues. So for Jay and Mike, I'm Joe, and we'll talk to you again on Friday.